This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show, which you can find every Tuesday at RelicRadio.com. 60 minutes of radio drama, beginning with Favorite Story. We'll hear the July 17th, 1948 episode titled The Strange Mr. Bartleby. After that, it's the CBS Radio Workshop and The Big Event, their story from December 16th, 1956.
This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story.
We have learned to understand many complex things in this modern day, but the complexity of the human mind is something which still baffles us. Oh, sometimes we may get a brief glimpse of its inner workings, as in a glass darkly, but for the most part, it remains our greatest mystery. Especially difficult to understand is the mind which has lost its bearings with its fellow men. In biblical times, they thought such people were beset by devils, to be driven out by incantations. But today we know that men often go mad because they are charged with such grief or emotion that their minds give way beneath the strain. We have a story of such a man and such a mind. A rather obscure story, discovered for us by the famous star and director of Universal International Studios, Mr. Robert Montgomery. As his favorite story, he chose The Strange Mr. Bartleby by Herman Melville, author of Moby Dick. Here's Bob Montgomery's favorite story, Act One.
How do you do? I am an attorney at law. My chambers are in a rather bleak building on Wall Street in the city of New York. I never address a jury or battle the cause of justice in a court of law. My office handles title deeds and wills and such. I'm afraid mine is a rather gloomy, musty office looking out on the brick wall of an adjacent building. Now, you'll say that nothing much can happen in such an office in the way of drama or excitement, and I'm bound to agree with you. But then, I remember a certain man, the man named Bartleby. This all happened in the days before typewriters, when all legal documents were copied by hand. I had one regular copyist, the chap I called Nippers. But the work piled up, so I advertised for another. I'll never forget the morning that motionless man stood in my office. I can see that figure now, pallidly neat, pitiably respectable, incurably forlorn. Your name?
Bartleby.
Yes, but is that your first or your last name?
That is what you may call me, sir.
That's a little strange. Which is it, your first or your last? Won't you tell me?
I would prefer not.
Well, then, what are your qualifications?
I can do the work required...
No, what was your last position?
I have worked for the United States government in Washington for the last 20 years.
In what capacity? What sort of work did you do for the government? Well, I must admit you strike me as a rather secretive chap, Bartleby. But I'm quite urgently in need of a copyist, and I'm willing to give you a try. Will you report in the morning?
If you don't mind, sir, may I start right now?
Well, yes, of course, but don't you want to take the day to straighten out your personal affairs?
I would prefer not.
I must say that at first Bartleby did an extraordinary quantity of writing. He wrote for the hour, silently, mechanically, in a clear, precise hand. On his third day with me, a rather strange thing happened.
I beg your pardon, sir.
Yes, Nivers?
I would like to proofread these titles with someone, sir, and the new clerk, Mr. Bartleby, doesn't even answer me.
Oh, really now? Well, we'll attend to that. Bartleby! Bartleby, come in here. There's some material to proofread, and we need your assistance.
I would prefer not.
Prefer not? What do you mean? Are you moonstruck? I want you to help Nippers compare these sheets. Now, here, take these.
I would prefer not.
What? Why do you refuse?
I would prefer not.
Nippers, start to dictate. Bartleby will check the copy.
Very well, sir. Whereas the Court of Chancery of the State of New York declares...
Bartleby, you are not following the copy.
I would prefer not.
Every copyist is bound to help examine proofs. Don't you know that? Well, answer me. Really, Bartleby, I have no desire to stand here and shout at you like an angry schoolmaster. You have decided, then, not to comply with my request, a request made according to common usage and common sense. Nippers, what do you think of this? Am I not right?
With submission, sir, I think that you are.
You hear what he says. Now do your job.
I would prefer not.
Now, mind you, this man was useful to me as a copyist. He just would not communicate with other human beings. And then I began to observe the strangest things. Bartleby never took a lunch hour. Bartleby was in the office when I left and was the first one there in the morning when I arrived. But didn't the man eat? I began to regard his ways more narrowly. I noticed that every day one of the office boys would bring him a handful of ginger nuts, small little cakes. But could a man live on ginger nuts? Bartleby seemed to. One Sunday morning, I decided to pick up some briefs in my office. Wall Street was deserted as a tomb. It's remarkable how quiet it can get on Sunday. I walked up the dark stairway, put the key in the lock of my office door. When suddenly someone from inside resisted.
Don't come in, please.
Bartleby, is that you?
Yes. I'm very sorry. I am not fully dressed. I would prefer not admitting you at present.
Bartleby, have you been living in my office?
Living?
Answer me, man. Will you answer me?
I would prefer not.
I left the building. I did not return that day. A great melancholy seized me. I knew then that Bartleby had been making that bleak and barren office his home. Think of it. What loneliness. His poverty must be great, but his solitude, how horrible. This building, which on weekdays hums with industry and life, at nightfall echoes with sheer vacancy, and on Sunday is so quiet it should drive an ordinary man mad. Bartleby. It was like a bit of wreckage afloat in the middle of an ocean. On Monday morning, I determined to have a talk with the man, as gently as I could. Bartleby? Bartleby, come here. Huh. I am not going to ask you to do anything you would prefer not to do. I simply wish to speak to you.
Yes?
Won't you sit down?
I would prefer not.
As you wish. Bartleby, will you tell me something about yourself?
I would prefer not.
But what reasonable objection can you have to speak to me? I feel friendly towards you. What is your answer?
I would prefer not to give an answer at present.
All right, Bartleby, I won't plague you with questions. Never mind about revealing any of your history. But let me entreat you as a friend to comply as far as possible with the usages of this office. Say now you will help examine papers tomorrow or the next day. Say so, Bartleby.
At present, I would prefer not to examine papers.
Prefer not, eh? I'd prefer him if I were you, sir.
Mr. Nippers, I'd prefer that you withdraw for the present.
You see, sir, you have got that word, too.
What word?
I would prefer to be left alone.
That's the word. That's it.
Oh, prefer? Oh, yes, an odd word. I never use it myself. Right now, Nippers, I'd prefer not to... Oh, good Lord.
I'll leave, sir, if you prefer.
He was beginning to do something in my office. There was a pall over it, like living death. One day, when Bartleby was at the far end of the office, away from his desk, I decided I had to investigate. I had to find out something about this man. I went to his desk and started to go through the drawers. They were empty, completely empty, except for a few crumbs of ginger nuts. When I turned around, there was Bartleby standing staring at me with that unexpressive coldness in his eyes.
Bartleby, I'm sorry. I was looking for... Well, for the love of heaven, this is my desk. I pay for it. This is my office. I pay the rent. There's no reason why I have to apologize to you. Something terrible has happened inside me since the day you walked in here. I have a feeling the place is full of death. You'd better leave.
I would prefer not.
Mind you, I had pity for this man, compassion. I wanted to help him. But talking to him was like talking to the brick wall outside his window. Then the strangest thing of all happened. The titles and deeds I gave him to copy were not turned in. I stopped my work and turned to listen for a sound from his desk. The familiar, even scribbling sound had stopped. Bartleby? Bartleby, where's your work? Bartleby, I'm talking to you. Bartleby! Bartleby, I've been calling you.
Well, have the decency to turn around. Just don't stand there facing that dreary brick wall. Why aren't you working?
I have decided that I will do no more writing.
Do no more writing? What's your reason?
My eyes. Look at my eyes.
They do seem a bit bloodshot. The light is not too good in here. We'll remedy that. You may take a few days off and rest your eyes. This is a hazard of the profession. Why don't you go to the country for the weekend, eh?
I have given up copying.
Even when your eyes get better?
Yes.
In that case, Bartleby, I'm afraid we'll have to part. I'll have no use for you. I'll give you your final check and you may go.
I would prefer not.
I'll be very generous with you, Bartleby. I will give you wages for 2 additional weeks, but you must quit this office. You must leave.
I would prefer not to leave you.
What earthly right do you have to stay here? Do you pay any rent? Do you pay any taxes? I order you, in the name of decency, in the name of the law, to leave this office.
I would prefer not.
We're ready for Act Two of Robert Montgomery's favorite story, The Strange Mr. Bartleby, starring William Conrad as the attorney and Hans Conried as Bartleby. Who is this Bartleby? Why does he cling to this building like a drowning man to a floating log? Well, perhaps we shall find the answer as we turn to Act Two.
Bartleby stayed in my office for weeks. Just stayed there, not working. His presence in the office was hurting my business. He frightened people with his cold, impersonal manner. I just couldn't call the police. It was not in me to commit this man to prison. And on what grounds? I finally hit on a solution. Since he would not quit me, I would quit him. I decided to change my offices.
Bartleby, I find these chambers too far from the City Hall. In a word, I propose to remove my offices next week and shall no longer require your presence. I tell you this now in order that you may seek another place.
He made no reply. He just looked at me. On the appointed day, the movers took out all the furniture. Bartleby alone remained in that completely empty office, a mute fixture standing by the window.
Bartleby, I bid you goodbye. I'm going now. I've tried to understand you. I've tried to help you. I've failed. May God, in some way that He alone knows, take care of you.
I thought I had left Bartleby behind me. For 3 whole days, I did not see him. I was settling nicely in my new office when suddenly the door flew open. It was the landlord of the building I had just vacated.
Oh, there you are.
Good day to you, Mr. Cavendish.
It is usually the practice, my dear sir, when you move out of an office to take all of your employees with you.
Oh.
When the new tenant moved in, that man was just standing there. When we asked him in all decency to move, he said he would...
Prefer not.
Yes. We finally got him out of the office by sheer force, but now he haunts the building generally. He sits upon the stairs by day, and he sleeps in the entry at night. Clients are leaving the offices. I'll be ruined.
I'll go to him immediately.
There he is. You see? Like a leech, hanging to the stairway.
I'll see what I can do. Hello, Bartleby. What are you doing here?
Sitting on the staircase.
Bartleby, are you aware that you were the cause of great tribulation to me by staying here after being dismissed from the office? Now come, I will help you find another position.
No. I would prefer not to make any change.
Would you like a clerkship in a store, perhaps?
There's too much confinement about that.
Too much confinement? Well, you keep yourself confined all the time.
I would prefer not to take a clerkship.
Well, then, would you like to travel through the country as a bill collector? That would improve your health.
I like to be stationary.
Well, then, be stationary in prison. I wash my hands of you. I left the building quickly, avoiding the landlord and the incensed tenants. The whole incident unnerved me, so I decided to take a short vacation. When I returned to my office, there was a package there waiting for me. I ripped it open. It was the old suit jacket that Bartleby had worn, that thin, dull coat that had hung around his skinny shoulders. With the jacket, there was a note from the landlord. Your friend, Mr. Bartleby, is now at Tombs Prison. We were forced to send for the police. However, he left this jacket behind on the stairs. We return it to you as his employer. Oh, Bartleby, Bartleby. What made you into the kind of man you are? As I started to put his jacket aside, I noticed a bit of paper in the inside pocket. I removed it. It was an envelope, a very old envelope. The postmark was blurred, but I could see that it was Washington, D.C. And the date was some 18 years ago. It was addressed to Miss Helen Underwood at a street number in Chicago. That address was scratched out, and a half dozen others were scrawled over it in its place. The envelope was covered with rubber-stamped messages. Not here, gone, no forwarding address given. Until finally at the bottom of the tattered envelope was another rubber-stamp message. Refer to Post Office Department 49, attention, Mr. Bartleby. I looked inside. The envelope was empty. I had to help Bartleby. He was a riddle inside my head that had to be solved. This envelope, this poor crumpled envelope, was the only clue I had to his past. So I decided to go to Washington. Perhaps he had a friend, a relative. Perhaps his past would be the key to this man's mind. I beg your pardon. Can you tell me where I can find apartment 49, please?
Basement.
Thank you.
It's just a matter. What do you want to go down there for?
It's a personal matter.
You can go down if you like, only I wouldn't advise it.
Why? What section of the post office is 49?
Go on, have a look. You'll find out soon enough.
I climbed down the musty stairs of the old post office building. The air had a clammy feeling. All my spirits seemed to descend with me. I came into a large, low-ceilinged room. All around, stacked high, were letters. At the far end of the room was a furnace, its mouth laughing at the room.
Yes, young man?
I whirled around. An old man stood at my side.
What can I do for you?
I come on an errand of mercy. Do you know a man named Bartleby?
Bartleby?
Has he worked here?
He worked here.
What is this place?
Post office of the United States government.
No, no, this room, this department.
Can't you tell? Look around you. This is the end of the line. The dead letter office.
Oh. Oh, I see.
You are a friend of Bartleby's?
I was his employer. I come only to see what happened to Bartleby's mind that makes him so sad, so odd, so lacking in hope.
For 20 years, Bartleby's job was opening letters here in this room to see if their contents could identify the sender or the addressee.
Oh.
Dead letters, young man. Dead letters. Doesn't that sound like dead men? Imagine this, if you can. The accumulated sorrow of a nation passes through this cellar. Can any business at all in the world give a man more hopelessness than handling these letters and sorting them for the flames? We burn them by the cartload.
Oh, Bartleby, Bartleby.
I used to watch his eyes as he opened the letters. Sometimes, out of the folded paper, he would take a ring. The finger it was meant for, perhaps molded in the grave. Another letter, a banknote, sent in swiftest charity, but the man whom it would relieve neither eats nor hungers anymore. Another still, a lost son to a lost mother, but lost forever to each other. Here in our cellar. Here in our flames. Look. Open a few of these, young men. Oh, on errands of life. These letters speed to death.
One question, please. Do you know of a person named Helen Underwood? Perhaps a friend of Bartleby's.
Helen Underwood. Yes. It was the one letter that Bartleby himself wrote in all those years. And a long, long time afterwards, that letter came back here. To him. Unopened. Unanswered. Like all the others.
There he is, still sleeping. The silent man, that's what we call him.
Thank you.
If you're a friend of his, you might be able to get him to go off this hunger strike. He hasn't eaten a bite all week. You know, the doc says he's dying.
Oh. Would you leave me alone with him for just a few minutes, please?
Help yourself. He'll probably tell you he prefers not to do something.
Bartleby. Bartleby.
I know you.
It was not I who had you brought here to prison, Bartleby. I've come to help you. Now, first of all, you must eat.
I would prefer not to eat.
Bartleby, I know what's the matter with you. Now, listen to me. You're sick, but it's not hopeless, Bartleby. No, don't turn away. Please, don't go back to sleep, Bartleby. There are new sciences, new doctors who can help you. Bartleby, do you hear me? Listen to me. You must live. You must live.
I would prefer not.
Bartleby.
Can't get anything out of him, huh? Still asleep, ain't he?
Yes, sleep. Don't try to wake him. He would prefer not.
Heard The Strange Mr. Bartleby, the most remarkable short story by Herman Melville, dramatized and directed by Jerome Lawrence and Robert Lee. William Conrad was the attorney, and Hans Conried was the tragic and terrified Bartleby. Claude Sweeten composed and conducted the score. And Mr. Robert Montgomery selected The Strange Mr. Bartleby as his own favorite story. We count it as quite a discovery, the kind of unusual drama that we're proud to bring you in this half hour. Next week, I shall have the pleasure of bringing to the favorite story microphones James Hilton's Lost Horizon. Miss Mary Pickford has selected it as her favorite. And I've promised Mary that once again I would make that perilous and dramatic journey to Shangri-La. So when we spend a half hour next week at the Lamasery in the Valley of the Blue Moon, we hope you'll be listening.
Research man myself with an advertising agency named Blair Thomas and Kane, I once looked up the source of that old chestnut about coming events casting their shadows before. It's from a rather obscure poem called Lochiel's Warning by an English poet named Thomas Campbell. Well, I've used the quotation many times, but actually you never know what shadow is foretelling what event. I know I didn't have the slightest inkling that I was in for the biggest event in my life when Dr. Johnson said to me,
"Well, as a matter of fact, since midnight, every baby that's been born in the hospital has been a boy."
The CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. Today, The Big Event, a fantasy for radio by Gloria Dapper and Draper Lewis. A fantasy about the law of averages and the day the law of averages ran out.
It may seem like ancient history going over that day now, but everyone else has had a chance to tell what happened to them, so why shouldn't I? I was in the waiting room of the maternity ward of a hospital when it all started. There were four or five other guys sweating it out with me. We'd been there most of the night. It was close to 1:30 in the morning. But it wasn't quiet like it usually is at that time in a hospital. Mr. Blair, my boss, had arrived around 10 to keep me company. At least that was his excuse for bending my ear for 3 solid hours. I kept saying to him, look, Mr. Blair, you don't have to bother waiting with me. It may be hours before anything happens.
It's my pleasure, Danny, my complete pleasure. Now, just relax. Old E.C. Blair is quarterbacking this play. There's no reason in the world why we can't improve each shining hour with a little business for Blair, Thomas, and Kane.
Well, Mr. Blair, I told you my dad wouldn't be interested in that kind of a deal.
If you're interested, Danny, he'll be interested.
Well, you don't know him the way I do. He never wants to... Oh, just a minute, Mr. Blair.
No, I'm sorry, Mr. Nolan. Not yet. Mr. Vance?
Yeah, I'm Vance.
It's a boy, Mr. Vance. You just follow me.
Another boy? Well, what are you going to do? So maybe we'll end up with a basketball team.
Calling Dr. Johnson. Dr. Johnson, please.
Oh, I wonder what all this excitement's about anyway. I wish Adele were here.
Adele?
Maggie's mother. She was due in from Europe tonight on the Washington. She said she'd come straight to the hospital.
Well, maybe she was held up going through customs or getting a cab from the pier. Danny, look. You don't want to spend the rest of your life in research. You're cut out for bigger things, boy. There's no reason why you couldn't end up being captain of the team. But you've got to get in there and fight. You can't just sit around waiting for Lady Luck to hand you the ball. You make your own luck, boy. You grab that ball and run. And that's all I'm asking you to do.
Well, I don't know how I could explain it to him.
Oh, well, there's nothing to explain. Just ask your dad to get on the phone with that chain of drugstores he's got and tell him to duck every other headache pill except Banish. Make sure Banish is right there where everyone can see it and buy it. Get the clerks to push him a little. Just a little push, that's all.
What about the new ad campaign on Banish?
We'll use that, too. But you need a little something extra riding for you if you want things your way, my boy. If your dad gets Banish started up the field, no one can stop us. Nobody has to wait for the brakes if he's smart, my boy. And you're smart, Danny.
Boy, for you, Mr. Marin, the nurse will be out in a minute to take you into your wife.
Danny?
Any news yet, Doctor?
Not yet. Might as well go home and get some sleep. I could use some myself. Come on, I'll walk you down the hall.
Mr. Blair?
Coming, Danny boy.
Maggie's okay, isn't she, Doctor?
She's fine.
Be nice if it's a girl. We sort of planned on a little girl.
You better keep your fingers crossed. We'll see.
You mean you think it's going to be a boy?
Well, as a matter of fact, since midnight, every baby that's been born in the hospital has been a boy.
Calling Dr. Johnson. Dr. Johnson, please.
We left the hospital on the Lexington Avenue side. Mr. Blair hailed a cab and offered to drop me off. But just then, a second cab pulled over to the curb, and I told him I'd take my own since I was going over to the west side, and he lived east on Sutton Place. As the cab pulled out into the early morning traffic, I kept thinking about what Mr. Blair had told me, the call he wanted me to make to Dad in the morning. And especially, I kept thinking about Maggie and the baby and how much easier it would be if we had a little extra dough coming in. I didn't even hear the driver when he said...
Funny thing about the traffic tonight. It's all been going the same direction.
Was it really
midnight.
Right to try to twist chance your way? And what would happen if you did?
It's all gone west, too. Lucky thing you live on the west side.
Now what?
I said it's a lucky thing you live on the west side. The traffic's all been going west since midnight.
Anything strange about that?
No. It's all been going downtown, too. Every place except near Pier 32. Oh, what a mess that is.
Pier 32, that's where the Washington dock.
Brother, what a mess. You might even call it a riot.
Get me over there, fast.
Hey, mister, if I was you, I'd stay in a cab. You'll never get on a pier to that crowd.
Now wait for me here.
All right, you heard what I said. No one else is allowed on the pier. Now just keep moving and no one will get hurt.
Officer, please, I've got to get on the pier. There's a member of my family getting off the Washington.
I don't care if it's Marilyn Monroe. No one's allowed out on the pier. It ain't safe the way it is now.
Well, what's happened? What's going on out there?
Look for yourself. There hasn't been a passenger off that liner yet that hasn't had the baggage under the letter R.
Well, that's ridiculous. That's impossible.
Ridiculous or impossible, that's the way it is. 1,800 passengers getting off that liner and all the names starting with the letter R. Figure it out for yourself, mister.
I went home, made a pot of coffee, and sat down to wait. 2 hours later, the front doorbell rang. I opened the door, and Adele said to me,
The next time I marry a man named Robertson, please drag me away from the altar. Oh, where's my bedroom? I'm dead.
The next morning, Adele and I decided that everything that had happened the night before, the babies, the traffic, the mess at the pier, everything had just been one of those freak accidents. Well, what else could it be? I had done a lot of thinking about more important things. I decided that maybe E.C. Blair was right after all. Why should I spend the rest of my life in research? It wasn't much fun being a permanent little fish in a big pond. I'd been waiting too long for Lady Luck to toss a little extra loot my way. And now, for the first time, I had the chance to make things work the way I wanted them. I went into the living room and picked up the phone.
Long distance.
I want to make a person-to-person call to Mr. John Nolan, Sunshine Drug Corporation, Chicago. The number is Temple 34573. It wasn't until I left the apartment that I started to find out what was really going on. At first, it just seemed like one coincidence after another. I stopped by the newsstand, and Pete said to me,
"You're going to have to take another paper this morning, Mr. Nolan. I've been all sold out of the Times since 7:30.
And the bus driver was yelling,
"No, no, I can't change another five. Aren't they making anything except $5 bills? Now stop it, will you? Stop it."
But that was just the beginning. When we pulled into Madison and 53rd, all the passengers got off at the same stop, all of them. They all went into the same building where I work. They all got on the same elevator.
All right, don't push. Floors, please.
And they all got out at the same floor, my floor.
I have an appointment with Mr. Elmore.
And I could talk to you, Mr. Elmore.
We're all going to have to get in line or something.
Blair Thomas and Kane reception. No, Mr. Thomas. I'm sorry. I'm trying.
I'm sorry, miss, but I'm already 10 minutes late for my appointment. Would you please
Lady,
see
please,
if he's
I only have one pair of hands. If you'll just be quiet and give me a chance.
What? Oh, no, I wasn't talking to you, Mr. Thomas. No, sir. Okay, everyone. Now quiet down and let's take it one at a time. One at a time.
Nolan. Morning, Elaine. Some madhouse out there.
It's getting worse all the time.
You know, everything has gone real goofy this morning. Have you noticed anything strange going on besides the riot outside?
Oh, I certainly have. The teletypes are coming in by the bushel. Hope we have a profit-sharing bonus this Christmas.
What do you mean?
Our sales. They're fantastic in 10 major cities. Every Blair, Thomas, and Kane product is suddenly booming. Well, I've been around long enough to see a product catch fire, but 32 of them. Never.
Well, let me see those teletypes. Oh, this is incredible. And Banish is right in there with him.
Banish is leading the field, as Mr. Blair would put it. Looks like our lucky day, huh?
Well, I'm not so sure it's luck. What else is world-shaking?
Call Bill Paris about lunch today.
I'll do that right away.
A funny thing happened out in Jackson Heights this morning. Every dog on our block bit the poor mailman. He was a wreck.
Hastings and Cole, good morning.
Bill Paris, please. Yeah, well, remind me to tell you what happened on our bus.
Hello?
Bill, Danny Nolan.
Oh, yeah, Danny. Look, I can't make lunch today. I'll be lucky if I ever get anything to eat again.
Oh, things jumping at your place, too? Aren't those teletypes the kind you have daydreams about?
Nightmares, you mean? You've got a funny sense of humor today.
What do you mean?
I mean, we're practically wiped out. If this trend doesn't reverse itself in an hour, we'll have to throw in the towel.
Oh, Bill, I don't get it.
Hey, what sort of practices are you guys using over at your shop? Everything you're handling is turning to gold. The rest of Madison Avenue is getting ready to move to the Bowery.
You mean our products are the only ones that are moving?
Well, if you call Grease Lightning moving,
not
a recorded sale in the country for anything except Blair products today. Danny, we've been friends for a long time. You sure there isn't anything under the counter going on over there?
Bill, look, I'll call you back.
If I'm still here. If not, try Welfare Island.
Mr. Blair has just called a special conference. You're wanted right now in the lion's den.
Okay, men. Let's get in unison here. Well, I suppose you've noticed the teletypes. I'd say that this is a 14-chart day for Blair, Thomas, and Kane. Men, I brought you in here to see that this roller coaster stays on the track.
But it doesn't make sense, Mr. Blair. I've been talking to a friend of mine over at Hastings and Cole. They're worried.
Worried? They're frantic. Walker, Auger, and Molly have already pulled down the flag. Hastings is next. He'll be turning in his diner's card before noon. Take my word for it.
Well, you mean they're out of business?
Yep. And we're just starting the jet fuel, pumping it in. When will we really start to travel? Va-voom! Ah, like that. Right through the gold barrier.
But it doesn't make sense. I did the research on all our products, and we ought to have about 1/8 of the market, not all of it.
I planned the campaign for Vanish, but I didn't think it would sell like it's been going all morning. Why, 2 stores in Brooklyn are sold out already.
You know what? Something is wrong with the law of averages. You just can't figure on 100% of all sales. And you can't figure on traffic going all the same way, and all boy babies, and all baggage all dumped under one letter.
Oh, don't give me that talk about law of averages. That's just another law made to be broken. We're going to stock the shelves of every store in this country shoulder high. The other agencies can pass out severance pay. We'll have a Christmas bonus that'll put a caddy in everyone's garage. And Danny, you're in for a very pleasant surprise when you pick up your paycheck on Friday, if you know what I mean.
Now, by lunchtime, everyone knew that something was going on. It was all around you. The traffic on Madison Avenue was jammed going downtown, just a few cars coming uptown. One store would be packed to the door, another store almost empty. There were extras on the street with headline stories from all over the world. Strange, half funny, half frightening stories.
Dateline London. There was an unusual scene at the famed Ascot Club this noon when Sir John Avery Avery answered a waiter in the dining room.
No mutton! No, I beg your pardon. No mutton. Why, my good man, I have been having lunch at this club every Thursday since 1921. And every Thursday I've had mutton for lunch. And do you mean to stand there and tell me that the...
No mutton, Sir John.
Deadline, Lucerne, Switzerland. It is with considerable embarrassment that we are forced to report that last night at exactly 12 o'clock midnight, every Swiss watch and clock in Lucerne stopped. In an interview with this reporter, Francis Bassler, president of the world-famous Bassler Watch Company, said...
I can't explain it. There is no explanation. Pardon me, but do you happen to have the correct time?
Dateline Moscow. It has been reported to the Kremlin that this morning nobody rode to work on the subway. Everyone walked to work. Since it is known throughout the world that the subway was invented by Russia, and since Moscow has the most beautiful subway system ever built, it is hereby ordered that everyone will ride the subway on their way home from work. Everyone, that is an order.
I went back to the office after lunch. The place was still spinning like a king-size squirrel cage, and most of the executives were walking around with dollar signs in their eyes. Then I heard a sound which seemed a little out of place in all the money-making merriment, and I saw Elaine dabbing at her eyes and trying not to let me see her face. Well, look, anyone interested in a gray flannel shoulder, it's available at the moment.
It's nothing, Mr. Nolan, please. I'm sorry, just being very foolish.
A woman's prerogative and privilege. Nothing I can do to help?
Not unless you'd like to go down to Washington and blow up the Pentagon. I just got a cable from Jerry. He's my fiancé, stationed in Germany. His Christmas leave has been canceled. We were going to be married.
Well, any reason for his leave being canceled?
The wire didn't say. It just said, all leaves canceled. Oh, who wants to get married anyhow?
I suddenly had a sort of strange feeling in the pit of my stomach. I guess maybe that was the first time I began to feel a little frightened. The world seemed to be slowly sliding off its axis. And all at once I wanted to be with Maggie and Adele and in my own apartment where I could shut the door and feel reasonably safe. I walked home, and as I turned the corner into our apartment, I saw a lot of equipment spread all over the pavement, hoses and pumps and things. The super was talking to a bunch of workmen as I passed.
How do you like this, Mr. Nolan? Believe it or not, every one of them washing machines in the basement overflowed. Almost floated the whole place off the block.
I walked into the lobby and there was a sign saying all elevators out of order. I climbed the 10 flights to my apartment. Adele met me at the door.
Mr. Blair has called 3 times. He wants you to come back to the office.
Well, if he calls again, I'm not here. I don't want to talk to him.
Danny, what's happening? What's gone wrong? I went to the supermarket this afternoon, and there wasn't a clerk in the place. They all stayed home.
Yeah, that figures.
And there was a Santa Claus near Herald Square. He had to have an armed guard escort him to the bank. He'd collected so much money. But none of the others had collected a cent.
You know, this is what I told Mr. Blair at the meeting, but he wouldn't listen. I told him that something has happened to the law of averages. Has the hospital called yet?
Not yet.
Oh, I'll get it.
Telegram for Mr. Nolan. Sign here.
Okay. Here you are.
Thanks, mister.
Danny, it isn't about Maggie. Is it? Oh, Danny, what is it?
It's from the commanding officer of my reserve unit. I've been ordered to report for active duty in 24 hours.
And so, tonight, a special emergency session of the United Nations has been called to deal with the present world crisis. The issues are these. If war should come, the casualties could very easily happen only to one side. Our side or the enemy's. In every country, orders for total mobilization have been issued. By dawn, the world will be an armed camp, waiting. The enemy powers have sent their ultimatum to the United Nations. Surrender or perish. Will we call their bluff, or can we afford to take a chance and oppose them? Tonight's vote will answer that all-important question. So, stay tuned.
Well, there's the answer for the telegram and the reason why Elaine and her soldier in Germany won't be getting married this Christmas. Now, this is what I've been afraid might happen. All of a sudden, something which is very funny becomes very serious as survival of the fittest or the luckiest.
Oh, Danny, don't talk like that.
Yeah, the day the law of averages ran out. That's what they'll call it in the history books, if there is any history after tomorrow. Well, I hope Maggie and I don't have a boy.
Hello? Yes? Danny, it's the hospital.
Shouldn't be too long now, Mr. Nolan. Would you like to listen to the radio? We've got one on in the recreation room.
No, thanks.
It's awful, isn't it? I mean about the UN.
Have they voted yet?
No, sir, not yet.
Danny, may I see you for a minute?
I'll call you as soon as anything happens. About the baby, I mean.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Blair?
I tried to get you this afternoon.
Yeah, I know.
I want to talk to you, Danny.
What for? Break some more laws?
Don't you know what's happened? The agency's out of business, Danny.
What do you mean?
We haven't a single account left. Everything's down the drain. Gone.
So, it's happened to you, too.
The clients decided they didn't need an agency anymore. With everything selling like wildfire, why have salesmen? Why have advertising? Why radio, TV? Why an agency? They all cancel their contracts. All of them.
What do you plan to do?
Well, under the circumstances, nothing. I'm going to the Pentagon in the morning, see if they need me. Later, when this is all over, maybe I'll try again. There's a chance of getting a foothold, even in the ad business.
You mean you're starting to believe that there is such a thing as chance?
Well, sure there is. Well, at least there used to be.
But not anymore.
It'll come back.
How? You're going to make it come back? You didn't want anything to do with it before because it got in your way. And you got me hoping to beat it, too. Now look what's happened.
Mr. Nolan?
Yes?
Doctor told me to tell you that it's a boy.
A boy?
Yes, sir.
What are we going to do, Danny?
What's the matter, Danny? You can't have everything you want, you know.
Well, yes, Doctor, but a boy.
The other baby's fine, too. First twins we've had all day. A healthy boy and a beautiful, beautiful girl.
After I'd seen Maggie and the twins, Mr. Blair and I left the hospital together. And I can't tell you how good it was to see the traffic running in both directions again on Lexington Avenue. I was even happy when we couldn't get a cab. Mr. Blair walked east, and I started west across town. I really didn't understand everything that had happened, what it meant. 24 hours out of our lives with nothing working right. Why had it happened? Mr. Blair had been so sure of a golden future, so sure you could force your luck, so sure that laws were made to be broken. And now the laws were back again and things were normal again. Christmas was on its way, singing down from a gray-blue spire of a lonely Madison Avenue church. And then just for a few moments, I had a glimpse of what it all might have meant. Maybe we can twist fate to get our own way, but we'd better be careful. For you break a law of nature, you do so at your own peril. And you better hope that the law you've broken remains in force to be broken again. This day was the shadow of what would happen if we all followed separate tracks and denied each other an equal chance. That was the warning of the big event.
You have been listening to the CBS Radio Workshop and The Big Event, an original radio fantasy by Gloria Dapper and Draper Lewis. Musical score composed by Ben Ludlow, conducted by Alfredo Antonini, and produced and directed in New York by Paul Roberts. William Redfield was heard as Danny Nolan, Ralph Bell as Mr. Blair, Ethel Owen as Mrs. Robertson, and Roger DeCoven as Dr. Johnson. Others in the cast included Elaine Rost, Ivor Francis, Herm Dinkin, and Ruby Dee. This is Warren Sweeney inviting you to listen again next week when, from New York, the CBS Radio Workshop presents All Is Bright by Henry E. Fritsch, the story of a fabulous search for the origin of one of the best-loved Christmas carols, finally traced to the singing of a trained songbird. Next week on the CBS Radio Workshop. This is the CBS Radio Network.
That's the show for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from Favorite Story, CBS Radio Workshop, past episodes of the Relic Radio Show, all the other podcasts, and our Shoutcast stream, all at the website, relicradio.com. If you'd like to help support this and all of the shows, visit donate.relicradio.com or click on the donate link while you're on the website. That's how this is all made possible. My thanks, as always, to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Be back next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.